5G, cloud, and AI all in one sentence?
Sign me up.
Wow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to GeekWire. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
I'm GeekWire civic editor Monica Nicholsberg.
And I'm John Cook, GeekWire co-founder.
Hey, it's great to have you both back in the studio.
It's been a while.
Good to be here.
Loving it here.
Yeah. So
what are we chatting about today?
Hey, so we're going to be talking about Microsoft and Samsung, and I think one of the greatest partnerships Microsoft has ever struck, at least.
Tell me the Windows phone's coming back.
Sort of. Yes. Yeah, so we'll get into that in just a second.
Fun.
Monica had a fascinating story this week about some unintended ways that people are using car sharing cars. That's going to be good. So we're going to talk about that coming up. Plus, the glorious return of the Random Channel. So lots coming up this week on GeekWire. But first, I want to start by taking you to a very special event. There are thousands of people packed into Samsung's latest product unveiling this week, and suddenly a rock star appeared. Let's listen to what happened.
Please join me in welcoming Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella.
Thank you so much.
See you soon.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much, DJ.
Before he goes on, I got to say what you're doing right here, John. Like, it felt like somebody was walking up to the Grammys.
It was like the Beatles.
Truly a god of rock has entered.
Yes.
Okay, maybe.
Not like a Steve Ballmer entrance stage. But
I will say the thing that I appreciated about that was Satya was clearly surprised by his reception at a Samsung event. I mean, Samsung and Microsoft over the years, yeah, they've done a partnership in recent years, but it is the handset maker that largely makes Android devices, even though Google makes the OS. Anyway, we'll get into all that later. So let's listen briefly to what Satya had to say after that better than average reception, let's call it.
So awesome to be here at your launch event. Microsoft and Samsung have had a long history of innovation across everything that we do, hardware, software, and services. And today, what we announced marks the next stage of this partnership. And more broadly, a profound shift in how we interact with the many devices in our lives. For years, applications have been built and purpose-built for single devices, whether it's the phone, the PC, or the TV, or even your watch. But in a world of 5G, cloud, and AI, we get to rethink it all and reimagine it.
5G, cloud, and AI all in one sentence?
Sign me up.
Wow. I'm surprised they didn't say IoT, too, because then that would have been amazing.
Did you catch the in a world?
His delivery style is very dramatic.
So, joking aside, this is a big deal. And it's a big deal for the very reason that you said earlier, John. Windows Phone is essentially gone. It never really took hold. It didn't get any market share. I think you could probably get a device, maybe, if you wanted to.
Didn't we try to track down like the last Windows phone user in Seattle or something at one point?
Yeah, we still should. Yeah. And, you know, in the meantime, though, obviously iPhone and Android have taken off, and these are the big platforms of the future, these devices that we're holding in our pockets, and yet they are very difficult to use seamlessly with Windows PCs. And I have struggled with this, and that's one reason why it's so interesting to me. First off, I think it's fascinating that Satya is showing up at this Samsung event. If I were going to write a book about Microsoft, I would start with this scene and then go back and tell the story of how they got here from like the depths of 2000. You know what I mean? I mean, this is like—
Really?
Yes.
This would be the start of your narrative on the Microsoft journey, this moment.
This moment.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Tell me more about that.
This moment is symbolic in ways that many other moments haven't been of Microsoft's complete turnaround. And I'll explain why. Microsoft, when Satya Nadella took over more than 5 years ago, was in a pit. When you look at where they were with smartphones, they were just throwing bad money after bad. This was a company that really didn't know where it was headed. He came in and said, no. We're going to focus on productivity, the cloud, and AI. But in the meantime, he has gone back with Samsung here and essentially created a partnership that makes the Galaxy smartphone lineup, the primary competitor to the iPhone, the device to use with Windows PCs. And if you use them with Windows PCs, you are going to get an experience that is very similar to what you would get with an iPhone and a MacBook, which is where I come in, which is where my struggles as a PC user for the past year, having switched from a MacBook to a Windows PC, a Lenovo X1 Carbon, which I love, my big struggle has been I cannot get it to work well with my phone. John, when you get a text message on your MacBook from your iPhone, what happens?
It just shows up.
It just shows up, exactly, because you have the Messages app built in, or at least available on macOS. Monica,
in fact, I just got one. Yeah. You heard it buzz.
Yeah, exactly. You're using a Pixel phone from Google.
I am, yes,
yeah.
The Pixel 3.
Yeah, so that's an Android device. What's it been like for you in terms of connecting, or say you want to get a picture from your phone to your computer, what do you do?
This is a challenge, definitely. I used to have an iPhone, and so you could just AirDrop pretty easily between your laptop and your phone. And the Pixel has some photo sharing issues that I don't think we have enough time to get into right now. But I also feel like there's never going to be perfect compatibility. When I had the iPhone, I was using all Google products, and those didn't work all that seamlessly with my computer and my phone. So it's always a trade-off, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is exactly the other problem I've run into. So I've like got the OneDrive app on my phone. So I'll go in and I'll say, okay, share this photo to OneDrive. Yes, put it on my desktop folder. Okay. You know, like compared
to... It's not integrated.
No, not at all. So what they're doing with this Samsung partnership is they are deeply integrating it. So the pictures that you take on your phone will essentially show up immediately in an app on the Windows PC.
So where does
and text messages, phone calls. It's the connection between... It's the mobile platform Microsoft has needed all along.
So where does like Google Drive come into play on this? Because isn't there tight integration already between Samsung and... Google
well,
and Google products.
There is some because of Android, the underlying operating system. But Samsung has actually been taking a lot of steps in recent years to pre-install Microsoft apps. So I think Samsung wants to make sure that Google doesn't have giant power as its sole partner in this whole realm. And so they look to Microsoft as a company to essentially counter that. And frankly, Microsoft has been doing this all over the place.
Well, they did it with iOS many years ago. I mean, I was curious, why wouldn't you start with that as your scene center for the book, the opening up of Microsoft apps on iOS?
Oh, well, yeah, that's part of it. That's part of it. But to me, this is sort of the surprising twist that Microsoft has figured out a way to create a connection to a large smartphone platform without having one of its own.
So are you going to get a Samsung phone?
I'm seriously thinking about it.
Wow.
And we should say they're launching this initially with the upcoming version of the Samsung Galaxy Note. But the assumption is that it's going to expand to essentially all of the Galaxy lineup, which is in many ways the dominant Android platform. Obviously, Google has its native Pixel, which I know you love in part because of the camera, right?
Almost entirely because of the camera. The camera is amazing.
Yeah, because the phone call, is the reception bad on your phone simply because of the phone or because of where you are?
I have Google Fi, their kind of wireless program that rents, I think it rents from T-Mobile and Sprint, so supposedly whichever is better at the time. But it's not great.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, 5G is going to solve everything, baby. I'm telling you. Here's what you're going to – this is my prediction. You know, at CES, there's always the buzzword.
Yeah. Oh, 5G.
5G
oh,
is going to be –
that's not a difficult prediction. I know, you're not going out on a limb.
We're gonna,
he doesn't have a crystal ball.
I don't think you understand how inundated we're going to be with 5G in the next year.
It's going to be overwhelming.
It's going to be intense. It's going to be intense.
Do we have a 5G session at the GeekWire Summit?
No, we don't. I guess maybe we need
we
to jump
too.
On this
we
bandwagon, right?
Well, we did an IoT track last year.
We did do IoT track, yes.
We have discussed it.
Yeah.
You know, the other interesting aspect here is that Microsoft also has two of the top apps right now on the iOS App Store. Minecraft, which has been up there for a while, is the top mobile game.
Let me see if I can guess number two.
Yes.
I would not have guessed Minecraft because I forget they're in the arsenal.
Yes.
It's got to be Office?
No, it's not. It's actually not.
What would be number two?
It's okay. Here's
something
a good,
with that. Something else.
No, not
oh, that's a good guess.
No,
something
here's
else
a good
with,
clue. Here's a good clue.
Gaming.
One of the most interesting parts about this is this app was actually derived from a Seattle startup. The startup was known as Beam back in the day, and that became the Mixer streaming app, which competes with Amazon's Twitch.
Wow, it's that high.
Well, it
they
is
just
that high.
Well, they just signed up the
esports star Tyler Blevins, aka Ninja, away from Twitch, and so that vaulted
that probably pushed him
Mixer up to the
Wow.
All right, so a fascinating moment there with Samsung and Microsoft, and that is where I would start the book.
Cool.
All right. Okay, we will be right back talking about car sharing, an unexpected closure, and an unexpected way that some people in our society are using these cars. That's coming up next on GeekWire.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with Monica Nicholsberg and John Cook. Monica, I ride around in a Lime Pod, and it seems perfectly seamless to get into, perfectly easy to use. I use my app, but it sounds like somebody else or other people in society are using these cars for different reasons than I do.
Yes. So in the Seattle region, we're seeing criminals come up with some creative ways to use Lime Pods, which are the newer car sharing service by Lime, the company that also operates all of the bright green bicycles that you see around Seattle.
It's interesting because you can get into those basically using the same app. It's super seamless. It's way easier than ReachNow was, which
Absolutely.
Speaks to something we're going to talk about later. But I can imagine that that ease of use and ease of sign up could lead to fraud and misuse.
Right. I signed up recently and all I really had to do was enter my name, email address, and kind of take a picture of my driver's license and I was good to go. So that ease of use, convenience always comes at some cost. And the Bellevue Police Department recently arrested two people who were using Lime Pods as getaway vehicles to steal packages from folks' doorsteps. The Bellevue Police Department said it's not an isolated incident. They have several cases pending where Lime Pods were used in this way. And then the Seattle Police Department said that there's a whole range of crimes that criminals have been using Lime Pods for, including, this is a quote, thefts, arson, brandishing firearms, and hit and runs.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. What are they doing to sign up without being noticed? Or like, because you have to give a certain amount of identification, a credit card to use one of these things.
The police
I assume they know every moment that I'm on the road
right.
and who I am and where I'm at.
Right, because the whole idea is that you don't have any privacy anymore. So why should the criminals have privacy?
Right. Well, the police didn't say exactly. I don't think that they wanted to give anyone any ideas. But in my research, I know that there have been incidents where people have stolen credit cards, identification, other credentials from legitimate users and used those to log in. And that tracking that you were talking about, John, is really dependent on the GPS tracker in the car, which can be disabled.
Oh, interesting. Huh. Okay.
Who would do such a thing?
So what does Lime say about this and what are they doing about it?
Lime has reached out to police agencies in the area and offered to help. They're definitely involved and aware of the problem. And the position of the police department is anytime you have an innovation, it's going to cause an innovation in crime, and that some people even kind of see it as a challenge to figure out how to use this new thing in creative and nefarious ways. But the companies are aware of the problem and working on it.
Very interesting. In addition to that, there was a recent change in the car sharing market in Seattle and Portland. ReachNow shut down. So Monica, you did a deep dive on this, looking into what happened to ReachNow, which was the car sharing service from BMW that operated in Seattle and Portland. What happened?
Well, it's kind of a long story and kind of a complicated one, so I'll see if I can give you the Reader's Digest version. Basically, earlier this year, BMW, which operates ReachNow, and Daimler, which operates Car2Go, decided to create a joint venture grouping all of the different mobility businesses they have together in this 50-50 operation. And to do that, it involved merging a lot of different companies. But the way that the merger shook out, it didn't actually combine Car2Go and ReachNow, the two car sharing services. It combined those with other companies. And in ReachNow's case, there just wasn't really a role for it because the rest of that new company that was created was more focused on public transit and just had a different set of priorities.
Some of the former drivers for ReachNow Ride, which was essentially the component of the service that competed with Uber and Lyft, as opposed to the component that competed with Car2Go previously or LimePods, that ReachNow Ride service, they complained a lot about the marketing and whether or not ReachNow was actually effective there.
Those drivers that we spoke to said that while the reason that they shut down was that the contractor, the vendor that ReachNow used to supply the drivers shut down in the U.S., they said the underlying issue was a problem of marketing from BMW, that they didn't really meet people on the streets and let them know about this service. Obviously, BMW disputes that and says that that things were going pretty well. I mean, these businesses don't make money. Car sharing is really kind of a young industry, and right now it's more about scaling than profits. But I think it was competitive with other services. They say it was just really a result of this joint venture and shifting priorities.
I like this comment on your story, Monica, on the ReachNow closure. The good news is 750 more parking spots just opened up in Seattle.
Sort of.
Now, there is an interesting follow-up story here. One of my contacts who uses these services, LimePod, ReachNow, LimeBikes, to get around, doesn't have a vehicle. He has experienced, since the ReachNow closure, a much harder time as a consumer to get around to places because the frequency that these cars are showing up has declined. And so I think there is a question here for the city because the city allocates a number of these vehicles to the region. What happens to those – if it is 750, I don't know if this commenter was right or wrong, but – what happens to those 750 allocated ride-sharing cars? Are they coming back? Does a new company come in? Do you have any sense on what's happening there?
Yeah, so it is about 750. That commenter is correct. And this is what I think is one of the most interesting things about this story is the city only found out ReachNow was shutting down a few hours before customers did.
It was
very abrupt. The same is true of the ReachNow staff. They found out they were losing their jobs that day.
Mm-hmm.
And the email that ReachNow sent out to customers – even included instructions for what to do if you were in a ReachNow when you received it.
Yes. So
it
was drive it to Canada and sell it.
Dude, yes. It was basically like, I don't know if these are the words.
It was
do not panic.
Right.
that was the gist of the message.
Could they just turn it off? You know, you're going across the 520 bridge and just turn you off.
We're out.
We're out.
I feel like the message should have been like, put down your phone.
That's right.
If you're driving a ReachNow, stop reading this email. But no, anyway, it was very fast and there wasn't a plan in place for those cars. So now they are working to pull them off the street and possibly sell them. But the city
I want one just as a vintage item. Like I have my Lackey billboard, you know, button and stuff.
A collector's item. Vintage BMW just for kicks.
Right.
Have you seen the retrofitted or revamped spin bikes around town, the orange ones? There's a few that like – and they even changed the word so it'll say like spit or something like that. So yeah, people have taken these – bike share, ride share things and turn them into collector's items.
After they go defunct. But to answer your question.
I'm curious if the city has any plans for this now.
They didn't really have time to plan.
Yeah.
Right? They just found out about it.
But how?
It's been about a month.
So they are evaluating their permit process and they said that they would take what happened here into account. But I don't know that they have plans to replace ReachNow. However, they set the caps, I believe. I think that car sharing is the same as bike sharing, where SDOT sets the caps on the number of vehicles and bikes that can be in service. So theoretically, they could increase the cap for LimePod and Car2Go in order to compensate for the lost vehicles from ReachNow.
I've run into the same thing as your friend, where usually I would go LimePod, ReachNow. I never did actually do Car2Go, but I would switch back and forth between LimePod and ReachNow and Lime because it was so easy. I was already using the app because of the bikes. And there have been times when I haven't known what to do. I should just sign up for Car2Go. For some reason, I just have never done it.
It's been around the longest. I'm surprised.
I know. I'm in the same boat, though. I had the same consumer behavior. For some reason, I was not using Car2Go.
It's because the cars were so crappy
when
they started, but now they've upgraded to nice Mercedes-Benz, right?
They're Mercedes, yeah. It's very competitive with BMW. But yes, car sharing, free-floating car sharing really started in the U.S. with Car2Go in Seattle. They launched in 2012, so quite a while before these other services.
Very interesting.
Some might say it wasn't it Zip Ride? Wasn't that the other one?
No,
Zipcar.
Zipcar.
Yes.
But that you had to go to a You had to go and still
so
do.
So that was not free floating.
Free floating is the key word because you had to go to like a grocery store and park it, right?
Yeah. Right. There were designated places.
Designated spots, yeah.
Ultimately, for me, I had shifted largely from ReachNow to the Lime Pods simply because of the ease of use of the Lime Pods, but also because—
Totally agree.
The technology in the ReachNow, I would end the ride and I would sit there trying to connect the damn app to end the ride. And I feel like I actually got charged dozens of dollars extra.
That happened to me too. My first time taking a ReachNow, I actually called Taylor, our managing editor, from inside of it, and I was just like, I can't figure out how to turn it on. I know you've written about them before. What do I do?
And he walked me through it. I'm stuck in a ReachNow and I can't get out.
Basically, and he helped me.
Pull over and park safely.
Don't panic.
All right. Coming up next, it's the Random Channel. You're listening to GeekWire. All right, welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with Monica Nicholsberg and John Cook, and it is time for the Random Channel, that moment of the week when we talk about the random items we were buzzing about behind the scenes at GeekWire this week. Monica, what's yours?
My Random Channel item is a new documentary on Netflix called The Great Hack that I watched and really enjoyed for a number of reasons. One is that it's squarely in my beat. You know, it's about how technology, social media, propaganda are influencing our democracy and elections. And there aren't that many really like juicy, exciting documentaries about that, although that's kind of changing. So this is about Cambridge Analytica, and I would highly recommend it. I think it makes this really kind of cerebral, confusing thing that happened very digestible and draws a pretty straight line from it to like where we are now in our democracy. And there was just a lot of stuff that I hadn't really put together. Like, it centers around Brittany Kaiser, who worked for Cambridge Analytica as the director of business development. And I guess I knew this from news reporting, but I hadn't really thought deeply about the fact that she was the intern on the Obama campaign in charge of Facebook. They really invented Facebook targeting for political campaigns. And then she was recruited by Cambridge Analytica, which leapfrogged in the Democrats in the 2016 election and allowed Republicans to really gain the digital advantage. And so by following her story, you really see how this new trend in elections has developed. It's really fascinating.
Okay. I was not aware of that twist. And you're right. I remember the Obama campaign was renowned for its use of new technologies, the internet, Facebook, social networking to target people. I didn't realize that. Okay.
So it's Republicans looked at it very closely and enviously and thought, okay, we need to learn from this next time around, while Democrats kind of lost their digital advantage.
So the documentary is called The Great Hack?
It is, yeah, on Netflix.
On Netflix. Okay, very cool. All right. You're a big documentary fan.
I am. In fact, I'm going to watch that. That's a great recommendation.
I thought you were going to say I started it but fell asleep, which is what you say every time I recommend something to you.
That usually does happen. And I have started a new documentary, and I have fallen asleep during it. And I will give a shout-out to it since we're giving some titles out there.
You should have your own rating system, like the number of minutes that you were able to stay awake.
That actually would be really smart. This is called No One Saw a Thing. It is on Sundance Channel. It is about a 1980s murder, early 1980s, of a man who was the town bully in Skidmore, Missouri, and the town took matters into their own hands and murdered him in the middle of the street.
Wait, are you giving away the twist?
No, it's out there. But it's about this whole town. It's just like 300-person town, and there were like 40 eyewitnesses and multiple participants of this murder of this guy who was a real nasty fella. And no one ratted each other out in the entire town. And still to this day, no one knows who did it.
Whoa.
And it changed the entire dynamic of this town.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah. And it's pretty interesting.
Can I do one more documentary show before
please.
We get to
this? This one had nothing to do with technology other than
neither
I guess I watched
one,
it online.
I give it a good 20 minutes.
Yes.
Have you watched Three Identical Strangers?
No.
That's another really good one that I can't really give you a synopsis for without giving it away. But anyone who's listening, watch it. It will blow your mind.
Whoa.
Good tips here. Good tips.
This is good. Okay. Well, I don't have a documentary to recommend.
What can you tell us about your random channel item?
So my random channel item is a Twitter thread from Seamus Blackley, who was one of the fathers of Xbox, as they call him. He was one of the original Microsoft team that created Xbox or DirectX. He was instrumental in the creation of the Xbox, but he has gone on to all sorts of different pursuits. And just this week, he described the process that he used in partnership with an Egyptologist and a microbiologist.
An Egyptologist.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's, oh, yeah, a, definitely, that's big
definitely
time.
A thing.
That's big time.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So,
I'm sorry. Yeah.
So they were able to collect from the pores of ancient Egyptian pottery 4,500 years old, like before the time of Christ, you know, all sorts of just way back, yeast. And from this yeast, he, as a scientist, essentially, was able to create like a sourdough starter, I guess, a bread starter.
Oh, I was hoping he at least created beer with this ancient yeast.
He created bread.
Seems like a waste.
He used like an autoclave.
Okay, that is very random.
So, yeah, but you know, it's the connection to the Xbox. Here he says, the crumb is light and airy, especially for 100% ancient grain loaf. The aroma and flavor are incredible. I'm emotional. It's really different. And you can easily tell, even if you're not a bread nerd, this is incredibly exciting. And I'm so amazed that it worked. So he proceeded to slather margarine on it and jelly and eat it.
So I am a bread nerd and I love this story because it's like science. I think bread is really kind of magical. It's like you're taking these really, really simple ingredients and through fermentation, transforming them into something nutritious and amazing. And it's magical when you make sourdough because it's got a history to it. Like I make sourdough bread regularly from my mom's starter that she's been using for years. So the things that are living in my bread have a history and connection to our family.
Yeah,
that's
and
cool.
And this is taking that to like the nth degree. It's like a connection to our origins as people. And you know, there's a whole school of thought that thinks that fermentation and bread making is like one of the things that really advanced human society and like was one of the missing links between kind of primitive living and advanced intellectual social being. So,
well, this is a great segue because one of the big panels we're going to have at the GeekWire Summit is the future of food.
Well, why not the past of food?
Well, because
speaking to the future of food,
I'm interested in how food is going to evolve for the next 4,000 years.
Oh, nice!
And how we're going to feed ourselves
if we're around that long
planet, perhaps. Well, we would need food, presumably.
I would think so.
So it's going to be actually a really, really fascinating panel.
That's
so.
The GeekWire Summit coming up October 7th through 9th. Get your tickets at geekwire.com/summit.
I do not have a true random channel item, but there's something.
Oh,
that
your
we
documentary,
didn't...
your sickening documentary.
No, there's
wasn't
something
it?
That was an actual story on GeekWire that is kind of typical for the random channel. So I'm going to bring it up.
Yeah.
I know people are really lamenting the demise of the Amazon Dash buttons,
yeah.
Right? People are really upset and
we
about
are.
This.
These were the these are the yes, physical yeah. buttons where you would sign up, and basically, my daughter loved it because of the Play-Doh. She would press the button, yep. And the Play-Doh would show up 3 days later.
Wow. Don't worry, folks, because Amazon's still growing, and they are expanding the most momentous product in the Amazon arsenal.
What?
The Amazon treasure truck, Todd, has expanded into several new cities, including Charlotte, North Carolina, my home state, Cincinnati, Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, and Las Vegas. This is such a bizarre product.
It's not a product. It's a delivery mechanism.
It's so interesting that Amazon does this.
You remember how obsessed we were with the treasure truck?
I know.
Because I was never obsessed.
Because
I don't get the treasure
truck. It is the most bizarre looking monstrosity, and we should say what it is. Basically, it drives around to these cities, and you can subscribe to the treasure truck on your phone and get product.
But you still have
alert
to buy it,
to you.
Right?
You
know,
I just want to clarify one thing. So the treasure truck is you're describing the treasure truck as if it were Santa Claus, because there's not one. There are many.
Well, yeah.
Like it drives
well,
around
now they're in
cities.
Now they're in 29 cities.
I don't mean,
I don't mean to
ruin the illusion for you.
I didn't think there was just one. There's at least 29 because they're in 29 cities, right? So it's they're going big on the treasure truck. Can you imagine being the project manager? That's your job at Amazon, is managing the treasure truck.
Yeah,
I mean,
you get to bring whimsy and fun and good deals to people, boys and girls.
All over the country. Oh, boy. Anyway.
From your workshop in Seattle.
There you go.
That's all I got.
Okay, yeah, that's all I got, too.
That's it, folks.
All right, until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Monica Nicholsberg.
And I'm John Cook.
Hey, don't forget to subscribe to the GeekWire podcast in your favorite podcast app. We will be back on Tuesday with an interview with Michael Cusimano, the MIT Sloan School professor who just wrote a book about the power of platforms in our lives and what they mean for the future. That's coming up next week on the GeekWire podcast, plus the return of the Week in Geek later in the week. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.